You're about to listen to the Complete Developer Podcast, the podcast by coders, for coders, about all aspects of life as a developer.
I'm Will, the curmudgeonly experienced developer.
And I'm Beege, the optimistic newbie developer.
Complete Developer Podcast is supported by listeners like you. We are now on Patreon at www.patreon.com/completedeveloperpodcast.
Welcome to another episode. This week, we are rejoined by our friend Aaron Orstrom to discuss continual learning. We'll start talking about why continual learning is important, then discuss the differences in learning on the job and learning at home. Next, we'll talk about having a goal for your learning and planning it out so that you accomplish that goal. We'll finish up with a discussion on including continual learning in your work-life balance and some resources for you to use. But before we get started, Will, what have you been fighting this week?
Please, for the love of all that is holy, do not hand roll your own logging framework. So I was minding my own business, trying to get a service working that, you know, gets metrics back from, you know, it's telemetry data from our software. And I happened to somehow end up stepping into one of the logging methods. And it turns out I stepped into hell. This fellow wrote a logging system that is not thread safe and is running in Windows services and in web applications, which are both multi-threaded environments. So, like, you know, there's a pretty good chance of us losing log messages or having debug messages go into the error pile, you know, just stuff like that. There was, you know, it's a lot more setup. It can only output to one source. So, like, if you want it to log to the console and log to the database, that's not happening. It was just... It was enormously full of fail. And so I now have one more thing to do because I have to rip out 305 locations that are using it and fix those at some point. So I'm looking forward to probably like a weekend bender with like, you know, 2 or 3 liters of Mountain Dew and heavy metal music and just fix it.
Nice.
So how about you, Aaron?
I wouldn't really say I'm fighting much this week, but I am having kind of a sense of deja vu because the last time I was here recording with you guys, I had also just started a new job.
That's true. I didn't think about it that way.
I actually looked at the dates and I think the first time I was on the episode with you guys, it was about a month after I started my job at the state. And then now it's only, well, today's day 4. Of the new job. So I'm, you know, just kind of getting settled in, you know, getting a feel for the lay of the land and you know, some training, onboarding, type stuff. So just kind of getting acclimated to the new job, new environment.
That's really awesome.
Nice. Yeah. So I guess next time you want to start looking for a job, you just need to schedule a podcast. You go 3 for 3. Yeah.
Maybe another 8 months or so. I'm just kidding. What about you, Beege?
Well, going right along with the topic this week, I got to blow some minds at work from the stuff that Will taught me last week before we started recording. We've started kind of some internal training or code reviews, whatever you want to call it, where we're taking turns presenting to other developers on topics like Angular forms or the developer's role in the Scrum process, which is one that I'm doing in a couple of weeks. And another one I'm doing is on logging. So I get to present to all of the developers in the division and show how I used the stuff that Will taught me. But something interesting happened last week because they were asking me about something else and I was showing in my code. And one of the senior devs was like, wait, what's that? And so I showed him where I had been playing around with what Will showed me. And gotten it working, and everybody wanted to know about it. And I'm like, guys, I'm going to be talking about this in 3 weeks. I'm like, no, tell us about it now.
Oh, man.
And then the junior developer that I was showing it to as I was playing with it, trying to get it working, she was like, I am so stealing that. And then Friday asked me if I would walk her through how to set up logging. So speaking of logging, yeah. Like we're using Nlog.
Yeah, we are.
Framework, so...
Partially. We're using Nlog, Log4Net, and then Tony's dumpster fire pile of crap logging framework. I'm going to call him out by name.
Well,
sorry, little man. He didn't work there anymore. It's fine.
We're using Nlog, and I think some of the senior developers have used Log4Net.
Yeah.
And so, but the other junior developer, she was asking me how to set that up, and so I walked her through it, and now she's using InLog too for her stuff. So
yeah, and I'm moving all the stuff at the office to InLog.
Yeah,
but
it's a really good framework.
Yeah, it is. So the stuff I showed you on the board, I mean, let's be honest here. You're going to be you're grossly abusing generics, Lambda expressions. What else?
Callbacks.
Yeah, it's a Lambda. Well, yeah. I'm trying to think. There was something else in there too that was just.
Oh yeah, it's beautiful.
Like generic constraints. Like, it's one of those things that's like, it's real pretty as long as you don't open it up and look at it. Because if you do it, it takes a hot minute.
Mm-hmm. You have to think about it a bit. But once I explained it to everybody, they kind of picked up on it. So
yeah, it was sort of like a whiteboard interview problem, though, when you're sitting over my shoulder. Looking at it, he's asking me questions. I'm like, dude, like, I'm capped.
Which, great idea for starting to do those in the developer launchpad meetups. I feel like that's something that really intimidates junior developers, like, you know, if you haven't really gotten a chance to practice it.
That was your idea.
Well,
yeah, I thought we stole it from you. We didn't.
I don't think it really was my idea, though, because I was talking to you about my interview and and just was like, oh gosh, I haven't ever done a whiteboard interview before. And then you were like, hey, would that be something that people would be beneficial to people? And I was like, well, yeah, of course.
So it was you inspired the idea.
Yes. Yes. We'll go with that.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm all about, you know, giving credit where credit's due. Yeah. So yes,
you're taking credit where credit's offered.
Yeah. Fair.
Yeah. Also, I have a new nickname at work. The operations guy on the team that I was recently brought on to fill in for the API developer that left called me Thor the other day because I, and I'm quoting, laid down the hammer in the first scrum meeting I was in by calling people out for being off topic. He was like, yeah, someone comes in and says, good morning. Beach is like, no, that's off topic.
There's a new dog in the yard and the leg is going up.
Yeah.
That's what that is.
But I did help the team get on point and our scrum meetings, even when we had the entire team there, including our managers and executive director asking questions in the meeting, it only took 15 minutes.
Yeah, that's pretty good. So did you drop the hammer on the executive director?
No, she was actually waited to the end of the meeting and then asked her questions. So I couldn't say anything because she did the right thing. She waited till the meeting was over and said, hey, before y'all leave, let me ask these.
Yeah.
Let me ask this.
Let me ask these.
These.
You don't need no stinking questions.
You can't talk about it. I was going to say these, like the concept we learn in JavaScript and Next.js.
Oh, man.
But with learning in mind, I have something kind of interesting for IoTs. So let's go ahead and roll the music. This week for IoTs, I have something learning related called Learn Internet of Things. Code Project put together a collection of articles and tutorials for getting started in developing and building Internet of Things devices. It starts with the basics and goes into embedded devices, services, and connected devices. This is a great starting point if you guys want to get started or are interested but really don't know where to begin. And I'll have a link to that in the show notes. Will, who's talking to us this week?
We grabbed an email from Brian Fischel. Says, hey guys, I just found your podcast about a week ago and I'm hooked. Listen to Are You a Bad Developer? Salary Negotiations so far. I haven't made the time yet to go through your episode list, but it would be great to have some podcasts on must-read books on every developer bookshelf, for instance. What do you guys read and consider especially valuable in your careers? For me, I found The Pragmatic Programmer to be an example of such a book. Might be fun. Tools, perhaps a book on developer productivity accelerators, i.e. check out Launchy and Ditto, for example, and or static code analysis tools, or just anything that you guys have found to be useful. Keep it up, Brian.
Well, hey, thanks, Brian. We'll actually be listing some recommended reading at the end of this episode, and The Pragmatic Programmer is on that list. But send us an email with your contact information because we've got a complete developer water bottle just for you. And guys, if you'd like your very own complete developer water bottle, leave us a review in iTunes or comment on the website or any of our social media. We post all our episodes to Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, and Google+. We're also on Path and Tumblr. Now that we've got the comments fixed on the website, we'd love to start getting some good discussions going. Also, I would like to read more legitimate comments than spam when reviewing them.
I found your website, and I think you could get a whole lot more traffic.
Yeah, I know. I love it because they list, like, the... we get those, it's not, like, this website, like, our website name. It's the name of the page.
It's the page title.
Yeah.
It's like, dude, I'm getting lots of traffic. I got tons of spammers. If I had a product that targeted spammers, I could retire.
That's true.
If I had a product that targeted spam bots.
Yeah.
Technically.
So, to encourage this, we'll be giving preference to comments left on the different posts when choosing who to send a water bottle to. So, just for everyone else's edification, I started updating Windows Saturday night, and it's Monday night, and it just finished.
Erin is a graduate of Nashville Software School and currently working as a junior developer. She's active in the development community here in Nashville and enjoys getting together with friends to play trivia each week.
Which Beej is also involved in. He's also in the trivia group.
I am. That's why I put that in there.
Yes.
No, I go out with him and play trivia. It's fun. It's all a bunch of junior developers.
Anyway, guys, it's great to be back. Thanks for having me on again.
Well, we're glad to have you back, and definitely going to have you on for a few more episodes that we have in mind. So
awesome.
Getting on into it, the only constant in development is that it's always changing. You need to keep learning to continue to grow and learn. I know Erin and I talked about this for a while.
Yeah, it's come up a few times.
Yeah. We talked about it at some developer launchpad stuff. We've talked about it at trivia a few times. Just like, how do you, once you have a job, keep learning? Because, you know, old technologies, frameworks, and languages, they're going to change and grow to meet new needs and add new features. And new technologies are constantly being built and put out for people to use. You know, you don't have to be up to date on the bleeding edge of technology, but you should at least be up on the features that are being used, or the current feature set that you're using.
I think we got a real taste of that when I was in the Nashville Software School program. In the first half of the program, when we were doing when we were focusing on front end web development stuff, we initially had learned JavaScript 5, and then toward the end, we got introduced to JavaScript 6. So, like, for example, to declare a variable, you could use let instead of var, and had to put use strict at the top of your JavaScript file. And so, you know, it was the same basic concepts, but the syntax and things were a little different. And then when we were in the back end portion, right in the middle of the program, I think it was .NET Core got released for Mac, when before you could only develop C# and .NET pretty much on Windows, which was a challenge for most of us because we had started the program with Mac computers and had to install Windows 8.1 on a virtual machine or whatever it was that we had to do to be able to do C# and .NET development. And then, you know, that got released right in the middle, and we were like, you couldn't have done this a month and a half ago. That would have helped us out so much.
That's very true. And of course, now with ECMAScript 7 coming out, we're going to get async await.
Yeah.
To replace promises.
Yes. Yeah, that will help a lot.
I know. Holy cow. I'm so excited about that.
Of course, we don't, you know, where I work, we're not really using any transpilers or anything. So I don't get to use that yet.
I remember when everybody was excited about JavaScript promises replacing callback hell.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I remember before they called it callback hell.
In previous episodes, we've talked about getting started in programming and learning a second language. This week, we'll focus on how to keep learning once you've started working as a developer. The first thing that we're going to talk about is learning on the job versus learning at home. When learning on the job, you want to focus on the technologies you're using for that particular job.
Yeah, that's kind of important. Your employer is paying you. If you're actually learning, you know, on the clock, they want to see some kind of return on investment. I don't know how many developers I've worked with that have literally, you know, they've done like skunkwork stuff on the clock in another language that the company was never going to use, playing around with new stuff. And then eventually they leave and they take that and they go to a different job. So the employer got dinged twice.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just it's not a particularly ethical way to approach things.
Exactly. And they're going to ask, what are they getting out of you learning this? How's it going to improve your performance, and how's it going to improve their product, and how does it affect the bottom line?
Yeah, and that ultimately, you know, it trends back to you, right? Because if you're providing more value because you learned that on the clock, they can pay you more.
Yeah.
Like, you'll bear that in mind too. If you're picking up useless skills while you're on the clock, you know, it's useless to them. You're not increasing your own economic value either.
Exactly. And for example, if they spend $1,500 on training you and pay you during that time, they need to be getting more than that back from you once you finish the training.
Yeah, at the very least. Now, of course, sometimes it's their own dumb decisions that make that not materialize. Yeah. Like, I got sent to a SQL Server Analysis Studios training that was like 3 days long, and I got paid and all that. I literally never, ever have opened that since that training. Mm-hmm. And that was 10 years ago. And I never will, because I hated it.
Well, the entire development team, I think the entire division got sent to Scrum Master training. At least the ones that hadn't had it. I think a few of the people that had Scrum Master training got sent to Product Owner training. And, you know, I use that all the time. That's how I got my nickname.
Nice.
If you don't already have them, encourage your workplace to start having regular code reviews.
Yeah, we get a lot of value out of them when we have them. Because I've got a junior dev that I've helped him clean up quite a bit. As far as, well, I wouldn't say he's junior. I guess he's probably mid-level. Every time we've had a code review, he's come out with a lot better structured code. And that feedback loop, you know, having that going really, really helps.
Well, I know the few times that I've actually been the one displaying my code, I'll put a lot of extra effort into making it look really good for the review. And sometimes I'll actually solve problems I was having trouble with because put under that gun of, all the other devs are going to see this, and I don't want them to see how hacky this looks.
Yeah.
Even though it works, I want better code, and that just encourages me to do that. You know, use these to highlight interesting or useful code that others can use in their development.
Yeah. You know, I have a couple things that are like, hey, here's a party trick
that,
you know, you might find useful.
Mm-hmm. What we've been doing is, because we're moving to sort of a enterprise services type architecture overall. So each team has kind of taken on a different new thing. And as we've gone into that, when they finish, like I finished the connection to one service that I was working on. And so I presented that to the entire team to show them how to do that. Now, ultimately, I'm hoping we can talk the big boss people into giving us some time to actually go in and write some NuGet packages so that they don't have to like go in and copy that code over and then adjust it to their app, but they can just download the NuGet package and go.
I can show you how to do those. It's stupid easy.
Oh yeah. I know how to create them. It's just having the time to create them that I'm going to need.
So Aaron, have you guys had to use code reviews at work at all? Or?
So to be honest, at my last job, it wasn't a whole lot of actual like development because of the nature of the project, with it being like a transitional thing. So like we would go in and do like small enhancements or small, you know, bug fixes, but most of it was making sure like the initial part, the beginning part of the transition was making sure the app's built correctly on your local machine and then being able to put that application on in our dev environment and our test environment so that we could be able to maintain it and support it on production when it was fully passed on to us. And right around the time that I left the job, the floor was opening up to more enhancements and more new development. So that was about to start. But up in, you know, through the 8 months I was there, it wasn't really true development per se.
Yeah.
So we weren't writing a whole lot of code. We weren't doing enhancements or features or anything. So we would review each other's code through the takeover, like just to make sure that when we updated, like the properties files and the Git repository URLs and, you know, just things like that, we would have those double checked, but that was more cross checking than it was, a code review, if that makes any sense.
Honestly, a lot of the better code reviews that I've seen have happened when there has been a previous developer that has left, that left really crappy code. Mm-hmm. When you get a senior developer to get a senior developer and a junior developer, the junior developer watches over the senior's shoulder and the senior developer fixes it and explains what they're really doing. Good. And you kind of have to almost elicit the time to get the code review done, you know, from your boss. Like you have to put that as, hey, look, this is an investment in the junior developer, in me. And that's kind of the way you swing that. But it does have to happen for learning to really accelerate.
Now, when you're at home, you can do kind of more resume-driven learning and technologies or fun stuff, things that are interesting to you that you don't really get to do on an everyday basis. You know, you may be using older framework or an older version at the office, but want to move on to something newer. You know, when you're at home, no one's going to be looking over your shoulder and asking, why are you learning Angular when we use Knockout at work?
Yeah.
Home is the appropriate place for building and learning in order to improve your skills to get the next job.
Or to do, you know, major changes on the one that you got, right? Because yeah. if you can bring that skill in and actually show it to other people and show the value, it's a lot easier to get changes pushed through. But your employer is not going to let you build the skill to that level when you're out. Yeah, when you're out in the office, like you got to do it somewhere else.
That's like with using the NLog logging framework. That's just like using any logging framework. You know, for me, I had to learn it on my own, and then I came into work and just put it there and said, "Look what I did!
Yeah. Steal my code, and yeah. It's easier for all the other developers." Yeah, I do that a lot.
This is also where you get to go all out on the stuff you just find interesting or fun.
Go down all the rabbit holes you want.
Exactly. Yep. If you're a .NET developer, you can learn some Python because that syntax sugar is so sweet.
Yeah, but spaces are part of the language. I'm like, what?
That threw me a little bit when I first started learning it, because like I started looking into it a little bit at home because we had a bunch of Python and shell scripts that were used in a lot of the applications that we were handling, and yeah. I was just like, let me just at least get familiar with the syntax so I can even look at this stuff intelligently. And you know, I was used to, you know, like JavaScript and C#, and you know, having all the, you know, open brackets and, you know, just all the syntax, whereas Python doesn't have as much of that. But once I kind of was looking at it for about a week or two, I kind of got the hang of it, and I'm like, I kind of like this is yeah. nice.
You weren't at the last code jam yeah. we had, so one of the guys there,
Chang,
mm-hmm. which he finally got his PhD.
Oh, nice. He's now Dr. I did see Chang. That. I did yeah. see that. That's awesome.
But he did the whiteboard challenge in mm-hmm. Python.
That's funny. I think I might have told you, but the interview that I went into my last job, it's a C#. You know, .NET shop, and I did the whiteboard challenge in Python just because it's what I'd been looking at and what I've been working with for about 3 or 4 weeks, and so the syntax was fresher in my mind than C# yeah. was. Anyway,
that works. But he showed us some stuff that I was like, that's really cool, like to reverse a string.
It's so much easier in Python. In the
string, it's like string ::: -1.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
And I'm like, that is so awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, could they say, or I've heard or read, or that Python is, I guess, a statistical programming language. Like yeah. they use it in like with reports R. and with, yeah, and that
was,
kind of
I
thing.
I was playing around with
and
that.
Data science a lot.
And mm-hmm. with neural networks.
Yeah. That's so, really cool.
And it was very good for that, especially with the list comprehensions and all that stuff.
Yeah. You know, we got into a Monty Python discussion at work today because I was testing the email service that I'd written, and whoever had done whatever the first record in the database was had put in the email address as john.cleese@montypython.com. And so it was like, it was sending me an email saying that John Cleese needed me to do something.
That's great.
But you get to play around with technologies that you may not get to use on a daily basis. You do need to be cautious, though, as it is really easy to get off track or go down a lot of rabbit holes to the point where you're completely lost.
Yeah, or where you don't produce any value
yeah.
out of it. Because, I mean, part of the point of spending your time is to actually have some value out of it.
That value is enjoyment, you can get into that curiosity mindset where you're like, I just need to know more.
Yeah.
Or stuff like that, and it's not fun anymore.
I've been there plenty of times.
Yeah.
Getting into MSIL stuff under, you know, the stuff that's under the .NET framework and digging through like how that stack machine works. You know, it's helped me in my career, but holy crap, was that awful.
Yeah, don't let yourself get distracted from what you're trying to accomplish in your learning, and don't paint yourself into a corner either.
Yeah. I mean, and we'll talk about this in a minute, but having a goal kind of focuses that.
Training at home and at work, they don't have to be separate. You may have an employer that pays for a subscription to a training service that you can use on your own time. I know we have Linda accounts.
We also have Pluralsight.
So we had Lynda accounts. I think they end this year, and I'm trying to talk them for the next fiscal year into getting us Pluralsight instead.
Did you know, side note, but did you know that for Lynda, if you have a library card, you could get access to it for free?
Yes.
Okay.
See, I have a Pluralsight account that I pay for myself, and on occasion, I've had to look stuff up or try to figure out how to do things, and I've gone to Pluralsight on my personal account at work and just watched the video. So it can go the other way, too.
Yeah, and I've done that, too, and that's why I'm trying to talk them into going with Pluralsight versus Lynda, because we'll talk about these in a moment, but Lynda has more kind of general and...
Yeah, Pluralsight's got a lot more tactical. Yeah. Like, get right into the, you know, into the depths of it. The big thing for me on paying for my own training is I don't want my employer to have control over it or access to it.
Especially if it's shared.
Yeah. Well, my big thing is, like, let's say that I decided, hey, I want to be a, you know, I want to be an F-sharp programmer. Not that I do. I don't want to ever use the term monad in a sentence, I don't think. but if I wanted to, and I was going through that training, and my employer had access to my training, you know, the status of what I'd gone through, they would be like, why is he looking into all this stuff? And I don't think that's necessarily the safest thing in the world. Of course, a lot of employers are going to do it, and then they're not going to monitor it. Like, they've already got to be paranoid if they're doing it. But I was paranoid when I got here.
Next is goal-oriented learning, or what to focus on when you're learning. To start, you need to have a goal in mind when you're deciding what to learn. You need to know what you want to learn before you really even get started with it. This is how you can tell if you're moving in the right direction. Start off by asking yourself what you want to gain from the learning. You know, is this to improve your job performance? Is it to improve your resume for getting a better job? Or is it for fun or to do something interesting and challenging?
Yeah, so what's your main goal with your learning right now?
So I'm actually really bad about the goal thing. Like, I feel like I'm, you know, I just recently made the career shift into software development, you know, about a year ago, going through the National Software School program. And then I've landed my first job as a junior developer was in Java, which is syntactically similar to C# and .NET, but, you know, the tools and things are very different. So at that point, I had initially started looking into, like, Java tutorials and things to try and learn Java a bit better to get better at my current job. And I knew before going in that I had kind of been averse to learning Java, and working in it didn't change that opinion. so I was learning what I could to, you know, be effective at what I was doing, but it really didn't interest me. And so I feel like I'm very much still in the exploratory stage of my career, you know, still trying to figure out which languages really appeal, you know, which languages and which tools and frameworks and things really appeal to me. So I've been kind of dabbling in a little bit of everything. So, like, I started looking into Python a little bit because of the Python scripts, and I was like, hey, that's kind of cool. And then I also started looking into, I really love Treehouse. Like, that's what we started with at Nashville Software School. And I just kind of stuck with it because I really liked the format of, you know, they'll present a concept in a video, they'll, like, talk you through a, you know, like a real world kind of example, and then translate it into code. And they're like, you know, they talk you through what they're doing, like, as they're typing it. And then they're like, well, hey, you go try it, you know, or you type along with them. And then, hey, you know, here's some quiz questions or here's some objectives for you to try it out on your own. And then usually at some point during the point of a course, they'll be like, you know, pause the video and go try this on your own first. And you really learn a lot more doing that instead of just watching through and copying what they did, because there are so many different ways you could go at the same problem, like either you yourself or other people. So I really like their format. I also got into mobile development a little bit, because that is something I'm trying to explore. But just with learning different technologies in the job, it's something I do for fun, but then I'm also trying to learn skills that'll help me better at the current job at the same time. So I would use Trello boards. Like, I really love Trello, because you can, well, I guess I can talk about this in a little bit when you talk about, like, setting due dates and stuff, but Trello helps a lot with that.
Yeah, we'll get into that in just a little bit.
Well, and I think Beej and I, ours are a little bit more, like, focused towards being able to do very specific things, just because of...
I played around with some mobile development because I built some games for my nieces and really enjoyed it. Like, I was looking into it, so I built the games as sort of a, let me play around with this. It had kind of a twofold thing. I wanted to build games, I wanted to build mobile, and I wanted to build something for my nieces for their birthdays.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think part of where I got caught on the mobile development thing was, like, you know, so there's iOS and there's Android are the two big ones. Mm-hmm. And then for iOS specifically, you can either learn Objective-C or you can learn Swift. But then if you want to develop for both at the same time without writing two separate applications, you could use something like TypeScript. That like compiles down
Xamarin Forms. Oh yeah,
yeah, that too. Yeah. But I mean, there's these tools that you can use to write the app once, yeah, and it compiles down into both. So it's like
Delphi has them too.
Yeah, I think I got stuck but with
you
like
do, you can do Delphi on mobile.
Oh yeah,
I want to do this now.
Really? Don't.
Oh yeah, Embarcadero's got all kinds of tools for mobile and for web. You can do websites in it, and
I don't care about web. I want to do Delphi. Pascal mobile development.
that is also on record.
Yeah.
That, oh, no. He knows how jealous I am that he gets to do Delphi.
I haven't gotten to in a while.
One of my favorite classes in high school was my Turbo Pascal class. I loved programming in that language. I don't know why. It was just, I really enjoyed it. And so.
There's not a whole lot of, you know, like you tell it to do something and it does the thing you told it.
Yeah.
And that's it.
Exactly.
That's what's so refreshing coming from like .NET or JavaScript or anything. It's like, I allocated this memory, and if I don't deallocate it, it stays allocated.
Yes. Yes, exactly.
Yeah, it's kind of nice.
So I want to quickly review kind of the SMART goals, because you really need to build your learning goals to be SMART. And these are specific, measurable, attainable, realistic, and time-bound. So under specific, know what it is that you want to learn. And have an idea of what you want to do with the new knowledge.
Yeah, in other words, like a goal of, I want to be able to build an app that does this, or I want to be able to do fairly concrete on it.
Next, it needs to be measurable. And you need to be able to measure progress towards the goal. You know, have an end in mind of what you want to build with this new knowledge, like you were just talking about, and be able to measure the progress towards that end.
Right, because when I was learning AI stuff, there was no measurable progress. I was just tooling around, and obviously I don't do AI programming.
Yeah.
I learned a lot from it that I still use, but not AI.
Speaking of AI, it also needs to be attainable. Make sure that the resources you need for learning are available.
Right.
And ensure you're at a level starting out that you can reach your goal, because you may want to do something. Your goal may be really lofty. And you need to break that down. So you need to break it down to, okay, before I can really go after neural networks, I need to first, you know,
brush
learn
up
the
on
syntax.
Linear, yeah. Brush up on linear algebra.
Yeah, or something like that. Exactly.
That's what I had to do.
They also need to be realistic. Build your learning goals so that you can reach them. Make sure that it's not too easy or too difficult. Because I know I've had problems in both areas with goals that were too easy. And I just knocked them out without much effort at all. And so I'm like, oh, well, if that was easy, let me go after this thing. And it was just...
Yeah, and you got slammed.
Yeah. And finally, time bound. Give yourself a time limit on learning. Set a deadline for building or creating something that you want with your new knowledge. Your goals may change or need to be adjusted along the way. Goals in general, and especially those for learning, need to grow and change with you.
Because a lot of times, well, the other thing that'll happen to you is you'll get a little ways in, and then you'll find something in there that you're really, really interested in that you didn't have the perspective to see how interesting it was until you're in it. Mm-hmm. And that'll be the thing that you pursue. Like, I thought that neural networks would be very interesting to me, and that is not anywhere near as interesting as gene expression programming and some of that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Because it's more the way I think.
And so your goals changed at that point.
Right.
Write down your learning goals. Keep track of not only what you're currently learning, but also what you'll be learning next. This is going to help you keep focused on what's important while you're deep in the process.
Right.
Because it's really easy to get distracted and go down those rabbit holes that Aaron was talking about.
Yeah, when I kind of went down one during my explanation, but I feel like this
we never do that on this show.
Oh, never. Never. The thoughts just kept tumbling right after each other down that rabbit hole. But this may be a good time.
She was a tumbler. bring that joke right back in.
Yes. Yeah, just tumbled right on down that rabbit hole.
So you were saying.
Yes, but this may be a good time to bring up Trello, which I know there's other similar tools out there, like you know, like Linkit for enterprise. And I know you said you were using some kind of Kanban board when you were first starting out, but like Trello's free, and like I use it to keep track of like what I'm currently learning, and then you can add like different line items. So like, for example, like I'll use it for a course on Treehouse that I'm wanting to complete, and so each course, like, or each video, I guess, has a title, or you can keep track of different courses in an entire track, which I think is what I do for the most part. And so once you finish one of those courses, you can check it off, and it has a progress bar at the top of that card that'll show you how close you are to completing, like, say, the track. So if you have 10 courses in a track, you complete one, you're 10% of the way done, and then you do another two, you're 30%. And so you can keep track of your progress that way while you're learning the new skills. And you can also put due dates on there. So say, you know, you have a 10 course track that you want to complete, say, within a month, you know, and so you put the due date at the end of that month. But say, you know, you get distracted with other things, or things come up at work, or you've got social outings, or, you know, whatever it is that happens to come up, you know, you can always push that due date back and have it be flexible while still maintaining that progress towards your goal.
That's a really good point. It kind of jumps ahead just a little bit into the planning.
Yeah.
That's perfectly fine, because we do that a lot too.
Yeah.
So, but before we get into that, I do want to talk about how your goals will help you determine what to learn.
Yeah, that was a big thing that I remember we both pushed as far as you were going through your learning process, because I think I started making fun of people that were like trying to learn 12 languages.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, I can do Hello World in 12 languages and live under a bridge. It's because, you know, early on, your big goal was basically just to be employable in the Nashville job market. And so that's why you didn't do, you know, Perl or Python or some of those others. Part of it was because of, you know, what I was capable of teaching you, but also part of it was, you know, what is the bulk of the job market here?
Yeah, I mean, my goal was to get a job, and that was, and this is kind of talking about initial learning, but it also applies here. Like, my goal at that point was to get a job, so I put my focus on what to learn, on what is the market looking for.
Which was C#.
Yes, exactly. Then as I got more into it, it was, okay, a lot of places want you to have C#, but they also want you to have some front-end knowledge. And what I learned was the big thing was Angular. And so that's where I put my focus later on, you know. And now that I'm in a job, it's, okay, well, I want to be training for that next level, for when I go for a more advanced position.
Right.
And so it is learning more detail in C#. Like, tomorrow I start a class on C# extended features. So
like all the link and all that stuff, probably.
Yes. Which is kind of funny, because I already use a lot of the stuff we're going to learn, but I'm hoping that it'll get into even more detail than I already know, and that I'll pick up on some things that I didn't know and can start applying. So you need to determine what you need to accomplish your goal. Do you need to sign up for a service that provides training or tutorials? Do you need a new development environment? You know, if you're going to be learning Delphi,
yeah,
it's not going to work too well with Visual Studio.
Right. It's not going to work too well paying for Embarcadero either. So you probably need to go to Lazarus,
with
the open source Free Pascal.
And how much time is it going to take to achieve your goals? Aaron mentioned this earlier about setting deadlines, and we'll get, like I said, we'll get into more detail on that in just a little bit. But
you had like a 6-month one.
Yeah.
It seems like, you know, give or take, and you were pretty close. You know, you probably should have been able to get a job, you know, at the 6-month mark once you really started going full med student on it.
Yeah. I mean, it was about 6 months into it that I really got serious. You know, I was working a full-time job and then coming home and doing like,
and writing a calculator app.
Yeah.
An endless freaking calculator app.
Yeah. It was towards the end of that calculator app that I got really serious, though.
Yeah. But before that, he went off on a tangent.
A tangent, like before
geometry.
Oh.
He's making fun of me because I found this. So the way I learn is I take a tutorial and I go through it, and then I go back and I'm like, all right, what can I add on to this? Mm-hmm. So I build upon. Yeah.
I mean, a lot of that really came down to, you know, the way we had planned out your learning, too.
Yeah.
It's kind of dragging you back on course a little bit.
Well, there really wasn't a lot of planning.
Look,
to
look,
it.
Look, the new shiny thing. Work on this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You look, too. You're like, where?
Yeah. There's a shiny?
So we've been mentioning it. The next point is you need to plan out your learning.
And that's so important.
Yes.
Like, well, hold on. I'll tell you why in just a second.
Oh, go ahead.
Oh, yeah, go ahead.
Oh, well, I was just going to say, like, for me, like, I think you guys are going a different way with this, but for me, like, by the time I get home from work, like, A, I'm not a morning person, and having to get up at, you know, somewhere between 6:45 and 7:15, and then fighting traffic to get to work, and then working all day at a computer, like, and then fighting traffic to get home, I don't want to stare at my screen anymore by the time I get home. And also, just depending on what else is going on that week, like, you know, say, for example, tonight, you know, we're doing this podcast episode. There's another night this week we're going to be going to trivia. Like, those are two nights I won't be able to do any on my own learning. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, what if I want to make it to the gym at least a couple nights a week? That also kind of, you know, you just have to plan around. That wipes out
the rest of your weeknights. But,
yeah, pretty much. It's like you, and then by the time the weekend comes around, all I want to do is play Skyrim, which is what I've been doing for the last 2 months. Most of my free time, but
I can't blame you. I mean, I just I just want to play.
I've played Oblivion through like every quest.
Yeah, well, he told me like it took you what, like a year or something playing Skyrim to do all the quests, because that's what you wanted to do.
I haven't played Skyrim yet.
It was Oblivion.
No, oh, yeah, Oblivion, okay, yeah. Okay.
Sorry if I said the wrong thing.
Oh no, it's fine. But you know, same kind of idea. Yeah. Anyway.
I played through most of them in Daggerfall too. That came out.
I will say this. I am on the verge of switching to PlayStation because I don't know if it is bad code or bad business, but my card changed. My debit card, bank sent me a new card and all that. Mm-hmm. And I go to play Destiny, and it won't let me get on Xbox Live because I haven't paid for my gold account. Instead of sending me an email and saying, hey, your card didn't go through. Yeah, did you get a new card or something like that? They suspended the account. They didn't like roll it down to the free account.
Yeah, no, that doesn't make any sense.
I spent 30 minutes waiting.
Yeah.
On a phone call, like on hold for them. So, because online, they would not let me change that. So,
okay, but by the time you get all through with that, you like you don't even want to play anymore because you're just frustrated and tired. Like, well, I'm just going to eat and go to bed or whatever.
And you'll run into the same thing with your training stuff, right? Because you'll be completely fried.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you'll run into some bump, you know, because usually you're doing it at the end of the day, which is one of the things. One of the reasons I like to get up early to do it is that way I'm getting that time first instead of coming home tired and trying to learn something, because that just
it doesn't work. Yeah, it doesn't.
Well, see, this is why. Well, now it doesn't matter because I don't leave the house. I just like literally roll out of bed, throw some clothes on, and walk into
that. Must be so nice.
See, I did the work from home thing here, but I didn't have an office to go into.
Yeah.
And you start getting like Howard Hughes. I mean, you just like you don't talk to other people, and you don't notice until you're like at the grocery store and somebody asks, how are you? And you have like a 45-minute conversation with them, and you're like, okay, whoa.
So you want to start your planning with your goal in mind. You want your learning plan to work towards reaching the goals that you have for learning. You know, this will give you purpose when deciding what to learn. It'll also help you know where you are in the process of learning and what you have coming up next. Start by building your own lesson plan. Some of the subscription services, you talked about some of them, they will give you paths that you can follow.
Yeah. Treehouse has different tracks, like usually based on the language.
Mm-hmm. I know Pluralsight does this too, and a couple others. And some will even give you quizzes so that you know where to start. These are kind of predefined plans.
Codecademy does that, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Break down what you want to learn from a tutorial or set of videos into digestible chunks. And Aaron kind of mentioned this a little bit already, but break it down into, okay, I know I'm going to be exhausted when I get off work, so I'm going to take an hour to rest and just veg out, and then I'm going to spend an hour learning.
Yeah, that's usually what I end up doing, actually.
You need to go through one of these chunks each time you have set aside for learning.
And you know, one thing I've seen that a lot of people do is they'll actually use the Pomodoro technique and estimate that way. And it's, you know, this many Pomodoros for learning, which if I had the timer, I probably would. But
Do you want me to buy you a tomato timer?
You don't even have to buy it. You can download Tomato.
Oh, I could write one.
Oh, yeah, but you can download Tomato. It's for Windows. It's like Pomodoro for Windows. It's like the same thing. But
Toggle has got one built in, too.
Do you want me to buy you a tomato
timer?
I want
a industrial engineered, like hardened one, so that like when I'm done, I can be like, bam! That's what I want.
I will find one, and that will be your palm birthday
present. Bear in mind, I've broken the coconut with my hand, so like,
I will get you the toughest one possible that you can palm strike that you have to hit it hard to stop it. I will look for that. That will be your birthday present this year.
Right.
And if at all possible, I will get Complete Developer Podcast logo on there.
That would be awesome.
Yeah. Also, you want to track your progress throughout the lesson or set of tutorials. We've kind of discussed this a little bit already. You need to know where you are, you know, where you left off from previous study time, so you know where to pick up. And, you know, depending on the format you use, like tutorials, videos, books, it may vary on how you keep up with where you are in the process.
But a legal pad and a pencil goes with just about anything.
Yeah, exactly. Unless even you, if you're...
And you can take them out of the supply cabinet at work, so you don't even have to spend any money. Not really. I buy mine because I'm too lazy to bring one home.
I was just going to say, unless you're one of the people who can't read your own handwriting later.
Yeah, there is that
there
problem.
Is that. Yeah, we've both suffered from that and gotten better at handwriting because of it.
I just chose a career in
computers. He's recovering from being a doctor. Yeah. From heading into med school. They almost got him. It's like Frodo almost becoming a ringwraith.
We've kind of talked about some of the services that will break down the learning into shorter videos, and they can help you keep track of your service. However, when it comes to written material or longer videos, the responsibility falls on you to keep up with your own progress. Also, if you're learning multiple things from different sources to accomplish a goal, then you really have to keep track of them on your own.
Yeah.
We've kind of hit on the Kanban board idea. You use Trello. Mm-hmm. I used a free one that doesn't exist anymore, so no point in mentioning it. When I first started learning, that's how I kept track of everything.
Mm-hmm.
Will and I use Kanban Flow for a podcast.
Yeah, for all the workflow on that. And
we used to use LeanKit for a while. And
yeah.
We started using it. We used it, and then we stopped much.
We kind of tapered down, and then that next $600 a year bill was headed our way. And it's like, you know what? No.
It's a good idea to take notes while you're learning.
Yeah. Well, you probably want to keep that notebook. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of times. I mean, I have a notebook that I carry around. I don't keep as much, you know, in the way of programming notes in there now. It's more business related mm-hmm. stuff because that's my main push at the moment. But that's a heck of a resource. Like I had to build an email at work from notes from training material that I went through, and it was an email to the marketing group, and it was, I don't know, it was a good 2 or 3 page email with a whole bunch of links and,
mm-hmm.
you know, pointers to case studies and all kinds of stuff that I got from a conference. And
that's
legit. And that way, if you ever have to bring something into work, you're ready.
This provides a quick and easy reference for you after you finish learning. It highlights important information in your notes, and you can reference back to the material for more details.
Yeah. I think what I tend to do is I use OneNote, and like I have everything kind of sectioned out. So like if I'm doing a Ruby tutorials, I'll have like a section called Ruby. Well, okay, I haven't done Ruby yet, but the same idea applies. So I'll have like a Ruby section and then have different pages per, you know, whatever tutorial I'm going through, and that's where the notes go. And then I'll also put notes in the comments. Like if mm-hmm. I'm following along with a video or like a little project or whatever, I'll put comments to myself to, like, you know, if it's months before I get to look back at that tutorial or that project, I'll understand what the frame of reference was or what we were trying to accomplish in that project.
I kind of do a similar thing, but I use the same notebook because I don't know. I just like to handwrite it. It sticks better when I handwrite.
Yeah, I don't remember things if I type them.
No.
Yeah, there's scientific evidence behind that, but
yeah.
But I'm a kinesthetic learner. I mean, as far as learning styles goes, accuracy, that does seem to stick better for me.
That's true. And I use the same notebook
mm-hmm.
for, like, I have a C# notebook and a JavaScript notebook so that I can go to that notebook and go, okay, here's, you know, all right, I remember 2 months ago I learned how to do this in JavaScript. Let me flip back to there. Oh, there it is.
Yeah, see, I have a notebook.
Yeah, well.
Because I'm lazy.
You know,
everything's in there.
Yeah, I know. I've seen you take notes when we've had meetings, like quarterly meetings for the podcast. I've got like a page for this, a page for that, a page for this. And Will has it all at once.
With margin, you know, things in the margin that say what topic it is.
It's like I'm going like flipping pages as we're, because we don't always stay on topic.
Can you imagine?
Really?
Yeah. But also follow up after you've learned something to make sure you've retained the information.
Yeah.
Hence why quizzes and coding objectives and things in some of the like tutorials and things are helpful, because it's like, we did just go over this, but do you really understand it? Let's make sure.
Yeah, spaced repetition is your friend mm-hmm. on a lot of this stuff.
Yeah, build something with the information you learned. You know, after you finish the course, while you're learning something else, go and build something with that. Start implementing that knowledge into your regular coding.
Yeah. And that kind of goes back to what I said earlier. Like, you learn so much more trying to build something on your own or to try and implement a concept that you learned that somebody else isn't immediately showing you. Like, you know, you can always go and ask questions and things later if you get stuck, but trying to actually implement the concepts in a way that, you know, wasn't directly shown to you or explained to you mm-hmm. will help really solidify that understanding.
Yeah, that is very true. Next, we're going to talk about work-life-learning balance.
I think we kind of touched on this a little bit.
Yeah, the biggest salient point is to schedule time to learn. And yeah. I've been real bad about this here lately. I'm having to kind of get back in the habit, which has resulted in a bit of watching SQL Server tutorials, you know, around like performance and all that kind of stuff last thing at night before I go to sleep.
Yeah.
Which is totally not the way you should do it, but
you know, this could be an hour or so in the evening to go through a few videos or tutorials, or as Will, when he's on point, likes to do in the mornings before you start your day.
Yeah. Or a lot of times, you know, one of my favorite times to do a lot of that stuff too is Sunday mornings because mm-hmm. my wife and my daughter are out of the house and yeah. I can train, I can go through stuff and I don't get interrupted and it's nice. But you do have to figure out a time that, you know, so that you can consistently apply a little bit of effort. That'll get you a lot further than trying to
binge. The idea here is to do this on a regular basis. I mentioned this before about how I'll finish work, take an hour or so, and then I have something. It's recording the podcast, it's editing the podcast, it's learning, or it's going out with friends. But every night, there is something going on, and that is a regular thing. So my body is used to, my mind is used to, okay, I work all day, I take a break for about an hour, and then I go back to doing something. And that's the key thing I want to get across here is get to the point where this is a regular thing, where not doing this feels odd.
I would agree. I mean, I've built a routine, and that's been extremely valuable. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it slips, but
no.
You know, it feels odd the entire time it's slipping.
Well, it makes it easier on you when you're doing that. Another thing I like to do is code katas in the mornings.
I used to do that when I got to work most mornings and just, you know, typically doing the same thing over and over again until I'm as fast at it and can do it in as few lines of code as possible, you know, using mm-hmm. the tool chain that I have. And then eventually you can't squeeze any more blood out of that turnip and so you find another one.
I will say, in addition to routine, environment has a lot to do with how focused you can be. Because I know, Will, you mentioned, you know, Sunday mornings being able to focus on stuff while your wife and daughter are out of the house. My current situation, I'm still living at home with my parents, and everything is in my room right now. So my desk, my bed, my TV, and everything.
Yeah, and that can be pretty rough.
And yeah, because I'll sit down at my desk to, you know, try and focus on, you know, doing tutorials or learning or whatever. But my bed is just 3 feet away and it's so much more comfortable than my desk chair. Why don't I, you know, sit on my bed and try to, you know, work on some stuff. But when I'm on the bed, I can't hook it up to my external monitors, you know, which actually help with, you know, spreading stuff out and, mm-hmm. and that kind of thing. And then actually recently too, my desk was just cluttered with papers and just to do things that I hadn't had the time or energy to like had to have gotten around to yet to be able to actually sit and work.
Yeah.
And so, that, I mean, and I know that's kind of self-imposed difficulty, which I actually did this weekend get around to cleaning some stuff out of my room, and cleaning off my desk and things. So I'm kind of in a situation to get back into being able to sit at my desk and focus on learning and things. Mm-hmm. But my point was that environment does have a lot to do with it. So
yeah.
I would love to have, you know, once I'm actually at the point of moving out, be able to have a second bedroom or just another space where, you know, sleeping and working aren't, you know, associated with the same kind mm-hmm. of area, if that makes sense.
I completely agree with that. I mean, we talked about that a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah.
On, you know, the bedroom should be for bedroom activities.
Yeah.
Yeah.
As opposed to, like, learning or watching TV or whatever, because it's just, you want to get to the point where you get into an area and you do the thing that you do in that area, not
exactly
10 other things. Mm-hmm. It makes it a lot easier to.
Just to reiterate, your time at work really should be focused on solving the problems at hand. You know, you may need to spend some time going through a tutorial to better understand how to solve a problem. And this can be a good place to practice what you've learned once you're confident in that ability. But you really need to focus the time learning at work to what are the work problems.
Yeah.
So I just want to reiterate that. I know we've said it a couple of times, but that is very important. And it can really come back to bite you if you don't follow that.
Yes, it can.
So the last thing we're going to talk about, we're going to kind of go through this pretty quickly, are just a few resources that you can use when learning. And we've already mentioned a lot of these. There are several online subscription services. I know Will and I both really like Pluralsight. It's a great source for extending your knowledge.
If you pay enough, you can get it you can download it to your tablet. Oh, that's great.
I would say it's a little bit more for maybe more advanced technical topics and not as much general. So like some familiarity with whatever topic you're trying to deep dive into would probably be helpful.
Yeah, you got to be a junior dev. I mean, they do have some pretty decent courses for like getting started, but they don't make the assumption that you've never coded before.
Right.
Yeah, their getting started courses are, you already know how to code and you're learning a new language.
Yeah.
Lynda is another one that we've mentioned that is a subscription site. It tends to be more general IT focused, and it may not be as deep into the developer topics because they kind of cover a lot of different things. And this may be one that you can get more of an introductory course to. Mm-hmm. Others are Treehouse.
Yeah, I would say Treehouse as well, and it kind of has a mix of more general intro type material, and they do a little bit more of deeper dive depending on the language and the tool. But it definitely is a good at least an intro to whatever it is that you're wanting to learn, and they help track your progress really well as well. And it's you still have to pay for it monthly. Like they give you a 14-day free trial, but it's fairly cheap, fairly affordable.
Oh yeah. Udemy is one that you pay per course.
And they have flash sales for like $10, $10, $15 per course all the time.
Yeah.
The problem is when the courses go on sale for $10 or $15, you usually get what you pay for.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. There's a reason things are cheap when they're cheap.
Yeah. You got to watch yourself on there because not all of their tutorials are very good. That's some of them are great. And every now and then you will get a $10 tutorial that you're like, this was worth $300. Other things we've mentioned are code katas and challenges. And these are good ways to test your skill and find areas where you might need improvement. Code Wars has you competing with others on challenges to improve your skill. Code Eval lets you create leaderboards and rank yourself against others in a team so you could get together with a group of friends and get on there and have like a ranking system. You know, there's a lot of websites where there are code challenges out there and katas, including our very own developer launchpad site, where we post our monthly challenges for the group. Podcasts are another great place to get ideas, but you guys already knew that.
Because
you're listening to one now. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry.
No, that's fine. We're on the same mindset there. Yeah.
Sorry.
Really, what I like to do with podcasts is to get ideas and hear about new technologies. Not a whole lot of deeper learning from that. I mean, just the format doesn't give itself to that. Even our heavier stuff and more in-depth stuff is more of a...
It's a tour.
Yeah, it's a tour of it. Give you an idea of what you can dive deeper into.
But I feel like that's not necessarily a bad thing for podcasts because there's some that I've tried to listen to that do get a little bit deeper. And without me, like personally being able to visualize like whatever concept they're talking about, or like if they're talking about something and I haven't had previous exposure to it, I kind of get lost and zone out with what they're talking about. So I don't think, and I mean, some people are into that deeper dive kind of thing, but if I'm going to do that, I want to see what's going on instead of just listening to three dudes talk about it. Or whatever.
I agree completely with you.
Yeah, there's a few podcasts that I just have given up listening to because they got into too much depth for me being unable to see what they're doing.
Exactly.
And that's just...
And it's
that, and I tend to listen to it in traffic. And so if somebody cuts you off and you miss something and you can't follow the rest of the episode, you know, I'm driving to Nashville. That means that I literally will never understand anything because somebody will cut me off every day.
That's true. That's true. And that, like I said, that's not the format for the deeper dive. It's a much better format for, hey, let me introduce you to this idea. Or, like, we do some deeper dives, but it's more, like you said, it's more like a walkthrough.
Yeah. And here's a way to understand it so that when you do the deep dive, you're not stuck on terminology.
Right. You know, yeah,
that's what a podcast is really good at.
If you want to socialize, you know, if you're extroverted, like the very few of us in coding that are, and you want to socialize while learning.
If you like people.
Yeah. You can look for a local user group or meetup. Not to toot our own horn again, but Developer Launchpad here in Nashville meets for coding jams once a month where we work on a challenge. And you don't have to work on the challenge. Some people come to work on school projects and things like that. It's just getting together with other developers and working on something in an environment where you can say, hey, I'm struggling with this. Does anyone know it? Can anyone help me?
Yeah.
So now you and I both helped people out that were working on school projects.
Right.
Or even just potentially find yourself some kind of mentor, whether it be, you know, technical or career or whatever. Like, you know, even if you don't talk about it at the meetup, you know, you can make a connection that you can take outside.
That's very true.
Yeah. And the other thing meetups are really good for, too, is if you're looking for somebody that is not necessarily a mentor, but a person that you use as a mental model mm-hmm. of what you should be doing.
Yeah.
That's fair.
That's been, you know, been helpful to me in the past.
Mm-hmm. But I do want to say you should probably be wary of YouTube and blog posts. Now, that doesn't mean don't use them, as, you know, they can contain some really useful information and actually really helpful tutorials. But they can also lack important information, or they like to make assumptions about what you already know.
Yeah, or what you already have set up on your machine.
Yeah.
You know, it's a getting started with, you know, they assume, okay, well, you're getting started with .NET Core, so you've got it installed and you have, you know, the TypeScript stuff installed and you've got SQL Server and you've got all these things configured. And then you go into the tutorial. It's like, dude, I don't have any of that.
Just really check the comments to see what others are saying about the tutorial. See if it's being updated, if errors or omissions are pointed out, stuff like that.
Yeah. And, you know, try to get some that are fairly recent too, you know, within the last couple of years is probably a good idea. You know, just about any language, if you get a tutorial from 2005, you're probably not getting the latest and greatest way to do things.
And that kind of goes back to what we were talking about at the beginning of the episode, where the only constant is things are always changing. So yeah, definitely something within the last few months to year or two is going to suit you better.
One constant is things are always changing. The other constant is things have always changed.
Yes.
Yeah. Finally, something that we promised in the comments, and that is our recommended reading list. So I have three books here that I would recommend to almost anyone starting off in programming. The first one is more specific if you're going to be in an object-oriented language, and that is The Gang of Four's Object-Oriented Design Patterns. The other two are a little less specific, and that is The Pragmatic Programmer and a book from someone we've had on the show, John Sonmez, Soft Skills, The Software Developer's Life Manual. And I would suggest to anyone wanting this book, get the audio version. It has everything that the written version has, but John goes a little off topic a couple of times on things that he has learned since writing the book. And to me, a lot of those were really great insights that I tell everybody. I'm like, if you can only get one, get the audio. Aaron, what's yours?
Yeah, so kind of like I was talking about a little bit before we started recording, so far I've actually just gained more value, like especially from the practical application perspective of actually learning while doing. So I actually thus far haven't picked up very many technical books, so I really only have a couple. There are two books that are written by John Duckett, and one is about HTML and CSS, and the other one is JavaScript and jQuery, and it's I think they were written in 2014, so they may be slightly out of date, but the concepts are pretty much, you know, still the same as they are now. But it kind of basically walks you step by step through a lot of the main core concepts in HTML, CSS, JavaScript, and jQuery. And then he also has a website that has a lot of the examples that you can follow along with. So it's kind of practical application and a little bit of theory-ish, but in a book. So, and they've got a lot of images, like colorful graphics and things. So that actually helped a lot with sticking with reading that book or reading those books and following along with those. The other one I haven't actually read yet. I actually just ordered it over the weekend from Amazon because this book was suggested to me last week. It's called Peopleware Productive Projects and Teams by Tom DeMarco and Timothy Lister. And it's essentially, from what I understand, it's how to communicate better in software development, like how to work with people and accomplish goals and just communicate requirements and you know, deadlines and things back and forth. So, you know, I thought it was kind of a cool play on software, but Peopleware because people like make that. Software.
Yeah. That's...
So, like I said, I haven't read it yet, but it was recommended to me by somebody. So I'll just
tell me how good that is.
Yeah. I'll let you know once I do get it.
Good.
Well,
yeah, yeah, that was going to be on my list, actually. Oh, so since you stole my thunder, I've got lots.
I did that last time, too, with the tool.
Yeah,
that's true.
I've got tons of those. So like one would be the Mythical Man Month, and that is by Fred Brooks. It's an older book. It came out in 75. So it's been around a while, but it just gets into it's a bunch of different essays on software engineering. So it's stuff like adding, you know, manpower to a project makes it later. Those kind of like those aphorisms that you kind of need to, you know, to understand just from the get go. Another one I would recommend if you're getting into a little bit more advanced stuff is Patterns of Enterprise Application Architecture by Martin Fowler. And the reason for that is it starts talking about how you make systems interact so that they don't, you know, break and fall apart. It's especially good for like understanding how to keep enterprise systems from having cascading failures. And speaking of Martin Fowler, he also did a book on refactoring, which is, you know, quite useful, that talks about the patterns of refactoring. You know, he's obviously a big patterns guy.
He's where I got a lot of our stuff for the Code Smells episodes that came out a few weeks back.
Yeah. And the last one I would suggest is called Don't Make Me Think. And I can't remember who wrote that off the top of my head. It was Steve Krug. And what this talks about is how to build, like, it gets into a lot of UI stuff, but it's basically the principle of don't put your users in a position where they have to learn something to give you money, or to accomplish a task. Like, they should be able to see it. And just, you know, it's a little bit of, it's got some graphics stuff, you know, not really graphics design, but it's a lot of ways to think about UX that will help you out quite a bit. So that's the four I've got.
Everyone should be continuously learning to improve their skills. This isn't just something for junior developers. Even senior developers, and you guys have heard Will talking about it, can get left behind if they don't keep up.
I'm trying desperately not to be tremendously uncivil to senior developers who are 5 years, 10 years behind on things. It doesn't matter if your day job doesn't, you know, keep you up to speed. You have to do it. You have a responsibility to feed yourself. You are an adult. And towards that end, you need to make sure that stays as easy as it can be. And to do that, you have to keep up on skills. You do not sit there and go, oh, well, my employer's going to teach it to me, or they're going to pay for it. They're not, necessarily. Maybe they will, and that's great, but you don't go through life thinking that way. That's like going through an intersection and not ever looking. You might get through. Then again, they might have a wreath out there by the side of the road for you. That's just a really stupid way to go through life. And I cannot express fully how frustrating it is every single time I talk to a senior dev that will not get up off their butt and learn new stuff. You know, I get it. You may have an 80-hour a week work week. You need to find another job where you can learn something else on the side and not be unemployed in 5 years.
Yeah, like,
there's no excuse for this whatsoever.
No.
So in essence, I'm, you know, going to sum it up as, if you are a senior dev and you are not putting in the effort to learn more, you are bad and you should feel bad.
Now, in this episode, we've talked about ways to continue your learning. And for more information about getting started as a developer, listen to our episodes Start Coding Today and Ways to Learn Code with Aaron. That pretty much wraps us up. Before we close everything out, Will, what do you have for us this week for Tricks of the Trade?
Well, you know, I ranted about senior devs not learning. If you are a senior dev, you obviously don't want to learn in a stupid way. In other words, you don't want to waste time because you probably don't have a ton of it. And so one trick that I use whenever I get into a new framework or a new language or whatever is I rebuild something small that I've already built. So for BJ, obviously it's going to be the world famous calculator application. Until the day he dies, he'll be building a calculator in whatever platform he works on. For me, it was a recipe manager. because that, you know, I did something in Access, like Access 2.0 way back in the day, you know, to keep track of recipes for, I think I did that maybe for, like, for my mom. And every time I've done something in another language, you know, I've started it. So I did it in Ruby. I did it in Python. I obviously did it in .NET. I did it in VB. I did it in VBA. I haven't done it in Delphi because they threw me right into the fire and said, here's some stuff to do. Go figure out how to do it. Did it in JavaScript. I've done, you know, I've rebuilt that application over and over again. And the value of that is that you already know all the business rules and you already have a working implementation that you can look at and you can cross compare. When I beat on senior devs for not learning, part of it is the fact that people do not put in the effort or the time, but part of it is that they don't know how to learn effectively. And I've found that to be an extremely good skill to have. So that's all I got.
Stand by for Titanfall.
If you have a question or comment for us, please email us at neckbeards@completedeveloperpodcast.com. Our theme music is an excerpt from Stand By for Titanfall by Pure Bells, available on SoundCloud and licensed under Creative Commons. The intro music for IoTs is Hillbilly Hip Hop by Jason Belcher. For references, show notes, and to sign up to our email list, be sure and check out the website at CompleteDeveloperPodcast.com. You can also follow us on Twitter at CompleteDevPod and like our page on Facebook to keep up with the news about the show. Thanks for listening. See you next time.